Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, February 2nd, 2014. This is episode 1054. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TECHGUY to receive $10 off at checkout. And by RingCentral. The cloud-based phone system we use just got better with the launch of Meetings, the full-service video conference feature. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral starts at under $25 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk about tech. While all eyes have turned to New York City and football, we shall talk tech. Think of this as your pregame show. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. Computers, the internet, cell phones. We talk about home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. And you can call in with a question or a comment or suggestion. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you wish to call from outside of those areas, you can do that as well. You merely need to use Skype or some similar protocol, a voice over the internet device. And because it's toll free, it won't cost you anything. Thank you. I know my phone is making noise. I'm stop now. No more noise. Okay, thank you. What shall we talk about? I guess the big story of the week, there were a couple, the fact that Google, after only 19 months owning Motorola Mobility, the cell phone arm of the old Motorola Corporation, has decided to get out of the biz. I think quite reasonably they decided that we don't want to be in smartphone business. We want to be in the Android business. And to the extent that the smartphone business peeves the other smartphone manufacturers, chiefly Samsung, that's bad. Because we make money when people use Android. We want people to keep using Android. We don't care if they buy Motorola phones, especially since they're not. Apparently not a very successful enterprise, which is too bad. This is, of course, a great disappointment to me because I just bought, literally this week, my second Moto X phone, which I love the Moto X phones. And Google was having a sale. Of course, now I know why they were having a sale. Always be suspicious. Beware geeks bearing gifts. In this case, they got I got $100 off the phone, got it for unlocked for, I think it was $250 for the 16 gig, $350 for the 32 gig. I thought that was too good a deal to pass up, so I bought another one. And then right after it came, they said, oh, and by the way, we've sold you. Oh. It's interesting what they kept. They kept the patents. That's important because that's really a lot of the value of Motorola to Google was the defensive value of having a lot of smartphone patents or cell phone patents. Keeps the other guys off their back. And remember, it's Android that they care about. That's where they make their money. Google doesn't make money selling phones. In fact, they were selling them probably at or below cost. They make money when you use them. This is the new business model. It's kind of intriguing, and it makes it very tough for companies like Apple, for instance. It makes money the old-fashioned way, by selling you a product that they mark up, you know. Both Amazon and Google can sell you products they don't mark up. Because as Jeff Bezos of Amazon said, we don't need to make money when we sell it. We make our money when you use it, when you buy stuff from Amazon. That's hard to compete with. Because Apple needs to price the iPad in such a way that they make money off of it. It's a changing world. That's why, to me, it's why it's so interesting to talk about it, always. Microsoft will be advertising on the Super Bowl. So will a lot of tech companies. I remember the. Do you remember the first time you saw a tech company advertising on the Super Bowl? I'm trying to remember which one it was. It's one that is no longer with us. Was it Pets.com, the little sock puppet? Remember that? Well, that's interesting. John, did you put this in here? Well, I guess the space station is above us right now because it's lighting up. No, that just means hello. This is called the ISS above. What is this?
It tells you when it's above.
It tells us when the International Space Station is above us. It lights up.
It's counting down the hours. The red light is how many hours?
The red light is how many hours?
So right now it's probably 9 hours away.
Oh, okay. And what will happen when it's above? The ISS above will light up?
If it goes through a color routine.
This is crazy.
Yeah, it's a Kickstarter. I was going to tell you about it yesterday, but we were busy.
Oh, well, John Salinina, who's a space buff. He loves the space stuff. So this is, he says, just plug in power and an Ethernet cable, and it just starts working.
We got it working on Wi-Fi on the guest network.
So all right. It knows what our latitude and longitude is. It has to know where we are, obviously.
There's a Kickstarter
project for it, and I should look for ISS above on Kickstarter.
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
The whole point. it also phones home to issabove.com to tell me when it turns on, and it tweets when the space station is nearby. You'd have to be kind of crazy about the space station.
Oh, yeah, I am.
A device that lights up whenever the International Space Station is nearby. What will they think of next? Count the colored flashes. If it's flashing red, that's the number of hours to go. If it's flashing green, that's the number of 10-minute intervals to go. If it's flashing blue, it's the number of minutes. If it's flashing all different colors, it means the space station is right above us. And then what? We wave? Let's all run outside. And then it sends a tweet.
Saying, hi, space station. I'm glad to
see you. It tweets the space station on my account?
No.
It says, it's at Leo Laporte will say, hello, space station.
ISS above.
Nice to see you. Oh, it's at ISS above. There is also an iPhone app called ISS Detector. That will also tell you when Iridium is above other satellites.
Yeah.
So according to Dave in our chat room, the ISS is above us every hour and a half.
No.
Not so?
Twice a day.
It
goes around the Earth.
You know where the hour and a half comes from? Gravity. No. That Sandra Bullock movie.
It's a 90-minute orbit.
But we're moving too, so it's kind of a hard thing to plot.
Earth every 90
right. It's a 90-minute orbit. It's very confusing. Well, thank you, Liam Kennedy of Image Beam, for the ISS above. That is cool. So right now, I think it's sleeping. No lights, nothing. But that caught my eye. That is very interesting. Yeah, because in gravity, they had to set their watches every 90 minutes. They knew that the debris would come around again. I learned a lot about space from that movie. Hey, 8888 Ask Leo is the number. If you have a question, a comment. Apple, according to the New York Times, Apple executives met with the Food and Drug Administration. What? What would Apple be doing meeting with the Food and Drug Administration? They wanted to talk about mobile medical apps. You can't avoid this because the Food and Drug Administration publishes its calendar. And the week of December 9th, they met with people from Apple, including Bud Tribble, who was one of the Macintosh engineers, and I guess is working on mobile medical applications. This lends a little credence to the idea that maybe Apple is doing some sort of fitness watch, the iWatch. Be interesting to see. Dr. Mom in our chat room, who is an actual doctor, says any medical application has to be approved to the FDA, but only if it makes recommendations. Does a recommendation like slow down, you're going too fast, does the FDA need to weigh in on that? I don't know. 8888-ASK-LEO. If you want to talk about technology, this is what I'm here for. This is what we do. I can answer your questions, help you buy stuff, talk about what's going on in the tech world. This is an interesting site. I don't know if I should tell anybody about it. You'd be interested in this, Heather Hammond. It's called Forgotify. Do you know Spotify, the music app? Turns out 20% of Spotify's music is never played. So when you go to Forgotify, it'll play one of those songs. They want to eliminate that gap. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your call next. Nathan Staten, you know, we could do this. We could play only never-before-played Spotify songs. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Is this one of them? This is from Forgotify? There, it's a wide variety. So there's 20 million songs on Spotify, like most of these music services. 20 million songs. Of those, 1 in 5 have never been played. 4 million songs have never been played. By anybody. But they're there because they have everything, right? So if you go to Forgotify.com, you can pick the song. You know, you could say, play me a song that's never been played before. When Children Were Young by Lomond Folk, blended Scotch music. I don't know where this stuff comes from. Looks like kind of an old album. Anyway, that's Forgotify.com. And it's actually because Spotify is now free to stream on your desktop, I believe. You can do this even if you don't have a Spotify account. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Heather Hammond is here. Mike in Glendale, you think I should talk to him next?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Mike, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I don't think my mic works.
Leo, how are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Good. All right, I bought a Dell Latitude Echo 5400.
Yep.
Bought the disc, but I wasn't smart enough to discover that there was no product key code, the 25-character key code for either of the disc.
Well, you got it from Dell. It should be on a sticker on the computer.
Oh, okay. I did not see that.
Yeah.
And I didn't get a certificate of...
No, they don't. They put it on a... way Dell does it, they put it on a sticker on the computer. Have you looked on the computer?
Yes.
And you don't see anything on the bottom?
No.
Would you buy it from Dell?
Yes.
Well, that seems odd. Did you call Dell?
Yes.
What'd they say?
I got a bunch of flack out of the customer service rep.
Flack? What do you mean flack?
Oh, I ask questions about...
You just say, I want my serial number. I can't activate the machine. And what did they say?
I didn't find their...
Was it Windows 8? Was it Windows 8?
No. I was running XP Pro.
Yeah.
And
this is a long time ago.
Yeah, Windows 7.
When did 8, by the way, they don't do that anymore. But I presumed, based on what you told me, that it was an older machine.
Yes.
But they don't do it with Windows 8. But you're saying it was a Windows 7 machine. How long ago did you buy it?
I bought it in June of 2010.
And you learned pretty quickly that... Why are you calling me now? That's 3 years ago. 4 years ago, almost.
Yep. Well, I'm not the...
What happened? Were you able to use the computer?
Oh, yes, yeah. So I had a hard drive failure. I got a new hard drive, and I want to... I don't want to be captured by Dell to call them up every time I have a problem with a computer.
No, they should have given you the serial number, or...
Yeah.
Somebody's telling me that Dell puts the serial number in the BIOS. Every Dell I have has a sticker on it.
Yeah.
And it's usually on the bottom of a laptop. It's on the back of a PC. Maybe look inside on the battery. They shouldn't have given you a hard time. I'm not sure why they gave you a hard time. There's nothing to give you a hard time about. Look inside the battery compartment. Sometimes they do that. If my concern is, it sounds like you bought an XP machine and try to. I'm not sure what's going on, but Dell should provide you with help on this. There are programs out there that will give you the key from the installation. I would run one of those. But you should still have a sticker if it's anything but Windows 8. So the chat room is telling me that they no longer do that with Windows 8, that it's built into the firmware, I guess. Gary tells me from the chat room, it's also on the board, the Dell Detection Program. If you download and run that, we'll find it. I'm not sure what I understand what the problem is. Don't shout at them. Just say, hey, help me, I need my serial number. Alvaro in West Palm Beach, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Alvaro.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Yeah, just first I want to say you've been my idol, and I know it sounds crazy.
But, why aren't you like a normal person? I idolize Justin Timberlake or somebody like that. What are you idolizing a tech guy for? Come on.
Well, when I was in high school, believe it or not, like I followed you, and I even recommended you to one of my shop classes, and we started watching your show.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we had, like, the Photoshop, when you were teaching Photoshop.
Yeah.
That would be literally your whole class.
Well, I want some, that your school district owes me some money, I
think. You should have, yeah.
No, that's awesome. I'm really thrilled to hear it. Thank you, Alvaro. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. And trust me, I really do mean that.
I appreciate it.
All right, so as far as the question, I wanted to get your opinion as far as crypto coin mining, like know-how is talking about it.
What do you want to mine, Bitcoin?
Honestly, I know it's a hobby. I know it's not something to look to make money into. I know how Padre was talking about Dogecoin and Litecoin. And I just wanted your, I haven't heard your opinion.
So there's a little difference. A Dogecoin is a kind of a humorous take on Litecoin. Litecoin uses a different technology than Bitcoin. And the idea is that it's easier for you to get involved. The problem with Bitcoin mining at this point is the longer Bitcoin is mined, the harder it gets. This is a built-in. I guess I got to step back a little bit, Alvaro, and explain for the – I know you know what all this is, but let me explain a little bit about what we're talking about here. These are what they call cryptocurrencies. You know, we're all in the U.S., and actually every country of the world used to a governmental currency – you probably have a little piece of paper in your wallet that has absolutely no value except because it has a president on it and a number. It's treated by everyone you know up and down the street as worth something. It is not. It's a piece of paper with some printing on it. Federal government says it's worth something so that we all kind of go, okay, well, if I could pay my taxes with this, it must be worth something. But all currency is something called fiat currency that is based on faith. Because you can't exchange this for anything of real value. Truth is, gold and silver have limited value, too. Even then, it was kind of imaginary. But especially now, because how much would a dollar, how much gold would a dollar, 1/3, 200th of an ounce is not going to have any real value. So it's all kind of agreed upon. Currency, money is agreed upon. About, I don't know how long ago now, almost 10 years ago. Somebody came up with a new kind of currency called Bitcoin. There's all kinds of currencies. There's Disney dollars, right? You could stores sometimes gave you, S&H green stamps. These are all kinds of currencies. Currency does not have to be governmental. In fact, it's only recently in our history that it was governmental. 150 years ago, the currencies were made by banks, not the federal government. So, we're running out of time. This is a long conversation. Hang on, Alvaro. Right. We'll talk a little bit more about this because I want to explain how you can mine your own currency without a gold mine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. That's not a law firm, but it is a way that you can get your legal work done at an affordable cost because you do it yourself. LegalZoom lets you save on your legal needs. And if you need a lawyer, they have an access to attorneys in almost every state, legal plan attorneys with pre-negotiated flat rate, very low fees. Some things that you do in life need paperwork. Starting a business, creating a will. Can't afford to blow them off. Trademarking, something of value. Your New Year's resolution may include dieting and exercise, but you might also want to include getting that paperwork done. LegalZoom makes it easy and very affordable. Visit LegalZoom.com to see all that they can do for you. When I started Twit in 2005, I asked my friend Kevin Rose, what's the best thing to do when I'm starting a business? He said, because he'd started a lot already, I just do LLCs. And he says, you can do it online. LegalZoom.com does an LLC for $99. And it's really easy. You can also incorporate with a Chapter S or a Chapter C corporation, $99. Over 1 million entrepreneurs have done this. And you know what's neat about LegalZoom? 90% of their customers recommend LegalZoom to family and friends. I do. I got my Twit trademark, too. Our logo and our name. Been very glad to have that. Protects us. There are no surprise fees, no hassles, no headaches. You can create a will starting at $69, even a living trust, quickly and easily. And because their step-by-step process was created by a team of experts in law and technology, it works. It's not a law firm. LegalZoom will connect you, if you need it, with a third-party attorney through their legal plans. These attorneys have profiles, so you can read up on them, and unedited user reviews, so you know what you're getting. The price is right, too. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs, like wills, $69, LLCs, $99, plus the state filing fees. You can't get around those. It's not very expensive. A lot less than going to a lawyer, I got to tell you. Also, get access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. Don't put off the things you need to do. Make your New Year's resolution to go to LegalZoom, and you'll save $10 when you use the offer code TECHGUY. All sorts of stuff. Do you have a healthcare power of attorney? I believe everybody should have one of those. You do it at LegalZoom.com. $10 off when you use this discount code TECHGUY on any of your legal services. LegalZoom.com. We were talking to Alvaro in Palm Beach with a great question about cryptocurrency. These are currencies that Disney bucks or Canadian Tire money can be used to purchase actual things. All money works if both parties agree. I can give you a post-it note that says I owe you $10, and if you agree to take it, we can use it as money. Cryptocurrencies are kind of interesting because the idea behind them is a little bit more sound. The Bitcoin was created by a person or persons unknown using the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto. And Nakamoto was a brilliant mathematician or a group of mathematicians who said, here's how we do this. Here's one of the problems with all currency. If it isn't tied to a physical object like gold or silver, you can make an unlimited amount of it and completely inflate the value or deflate the value, I guess. If you print too much of it, all of a sudden it has less value. So he said, what we're going to do is we're going to limit the total number of Bitcoins in the world ever for all time to 21 million. And we're going to you're going to have to create Bitcoins by solving difficult mathematical problems. So somebody can be a Bitcoin miner by solving problems, mathematical problems. When the problem's solved, you are rewarded with a Bitcoin. Actually, several Bitcoins. It used to be 50. I think it's down to 25 now. And Nakamoto also said, as more coins are mined, it will get harder to solve these problems because he realized computing machinery was going to get smarter and smarter, and they didn't want to accelerate the process. The idea is that all 21 million of these Bitcoins will be fully mined at some point around 2040. There will never again be any more Bitcoins made, so you don't have to worry about inflation or deflation. But the value does fluctuate based on what people will pay for them because there are Bitcoin exchanges. Bitcoin could be used to buy cupcakes in San Francisco. It could be used to buy computer hardware online at Overstock.com. There are a lot of companies started to take Bitcoins, but it's somewhat speculative because right now, one Bitcoin's worth about $1,000. In the past, it's been worth $1. There are some investors like the Winklevi twins, the Winklevosses, who think it'll be worth $40,000 a coin. So I have 7 Bitcoins. It could be worth anywhere from $7 to $280,000, depending on what the market, decides. So it probably doesn't hurt to accept Bitcoin for transactions and hold on to it. It's a speculative play. Now, there are other cryptocurrencies, Litecoin and a variant of Litecoin called Dogecoin, that are designed very similarly to Bitcoin, but they took out that part of it gets harder and harder to mine it. They can be efficiently mined with consumer grade hardware. You don't need a fancy computer to do it. At this point, Bitcoin is so popular and so many people are mining it that you need to go out and buy an extremely specialized computer designed just to mine Bitcoin. It's not feasible. The chances of you making money, and this is kind of the other point, is that Nakamoto cleverly wanted to make it so that you would kind of break even based on the amount of power consumed, the amount you spend on the hardware. He didn't want anybody getting rich on Bitcoin. So Litecoin is a little different. It's using a script technology. You can use a standard computer. That's what Father Robert Ballester was talking about on Know How. That's one of the shows we do. He did a Know How show on how to mine Bitcoin, or Dogecoin, I should say, which is Dogecoin is the same technique as Litecoin. Not the same kind of coin. They're not interchangeable. As far as I know, nobody takes Litecoin or Dogecoin. Not as many people as take Bitcoin. I don't know, though. There's no reason why there shouldn't be many different cryptocurrencies, just as there are currently many different kinds of currency. As long as people can agree on it and exchange it, one for the other.
Okay.
So mining Dogecoin, is it worth it as a hobby? Sure. Why not? It's fun. You don't need fancy hardware. In fact, one of our shows, This Week in Computer Hardware, demonstrated a Dogecoin miner that was fairly inexpensive, based on an AMD chip. You can find it. Read about it at PC Perspective, PCPER.com. This actually uses AMD graphics cards. Graphics cards are better at this kind of thing than CPUs. The problem with mining Bitcoin now is you need something, a highly customized chip to do it, an ASIC. So, it's fascinating. I think it's a very interesting concept. I don't mind Bitcoin or Dogecoin. Apparently, Robert is using some unused computer cycles in the basement to mine Dogecoin. it's probably somewhat akin to going out and buying a metal detector and scavenging the beach. It's very similar to that. If you enjoy, walking around with the sand between your toes, it's a worthwhile hobby. I see a lot of people doing it. You ain't going to get rich doing it, probably. You might, though.
No, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and at the end, I mean, that's kind of what I was looking for, at the end. It's a hobby. I have computers laying around.
Right.
Why not?
Yeah. And I wouldn't, at this point, it doesn't make sense. I've seen some amazing Bitcoin rigs. People spend, there are people who speculatively do this for a living. Read an article in The Atlantic about a guy who is mining full time. He's taken over his house, and he's got very expensive hardware, and his electricity bill's gone through the roof. But if he finds bitcoins, then it kind of pays for itself. He's in a co-op, which is an interesting idea. A bunch of people get together, and then it's like buying lottery tickets and sharing the rewards. I don't think it's a great idea, but if it turns you on.
I guess it passes a time when there's nothing else to do, obviously, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that, frankly, Dogecoin makes more sense. Well, on the one hand, I mean, you don't have to buy super expensive hardware or dim the power for your neighbors to do it. But on the other hand, you're not going to make a lot of money even if you find some Dogecoins, because I just don't.
Yeah, that's what I've seen. Like, it's not about the money. When I started reading up on it,
yeah.
I know right now it's something where you never know. I mean, just like I guess Bitcoin, nobody ever knew that something would go less than a dollar or a dollar
right.
value to.
If you go to Mt. Gox, which is one of many Bitcoin exchanges, it's mtgox.com. They will exchange Bitcoins for dollars. And they tell you right now how much, how many Bitcoins will get how much money. Right now, it's $995 per Bitcoin, which is a huge amount of money. But it's very volatile. I mean, it's been higher. It's been lower. And the volatility is based, just like the stock market, on speculators.
People. Yeah. If I'm able to mine Litecoin and wherever I'm mining, they switch it to Bitcoin automatically, and then it goes to an online bank. You recommend that?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't recommend any of it. That's fine. There are a number of companies that will do that. that will make sure, you know, the problem is, who are these people? They're all anonymous. Sure. And so there's nothing to keep them from ripping you off. So you have to kind of trust them.
Yeah.
Find somebody you trust. Yeah, there have been a number of occasions of these guys being completely dishonest. So Bitcoin could go either way. So one way Bitcoin could go is through the roof, as some speculators and investors think. The other way it could go is governments could start to ban it. Chinese government has severely limited what you can do with Bitcoin. They're very suspicious of it.
Yeah, something about, like, if they start transferring money between unlawful things.
Hey, thanks for the call. It's a great question. It's a fascinating subject. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. We live in such an interesting world, don't we? One of the reasons I spend time talking about things like cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin is because none of this could have existed without the internet and computers. And now that it does, it kind of throws everything on its ear, including governmental currencies. That's why the Chinese government's not too fond of it. When you have a central government and your power relies upon keeping control of this centralized government, you can imagine how scary something like Bitcoin is. Very interesting stuff, I think. Moving on, Kathy in Santa Cruz. Hi, Kathy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a big fan.
Thank you. I used to
listen to you on KGO for a long time. And
thank you.
Been watching you for a few years on my computer.
Thank you.
And I even watched you walk from the cottage down to your new studio that day.
That was kind of fun. We had a little parade down the two blocks.
It was a lot of fun to watch.
I picked up my exercise ball that I sit on and carried that.
I know. Well, my problem is watching you now. I use live.twit.tv website. And for some reason, I'll give you a background on what I got here at the house in a minute, but you're on for 10 seconds and it freezes.
Yeah, let me stop you. This is not us or you. It's Ustream.
It's Ustream?
Ustream is one of our providers. So we're at the mercy of the companies that provide the video streams. This is one of the neat things about the internet. You can be a television broadcaster. Normally, that'd be very expensive. But thanks to companies like Justin.tv, Ustream.tv, YouTube Live and others, you can stream live to a billion people over the internet at no cost. They put ads in it. That's how they make money. The problem is that, so that's what we use. Four different companies. We use Justin.tv, Ustream, Bitgravity is one of them.
I see them all listed.
Yeah. So if you're getting some intermittent, Ustream's been a problem today. I'm not sure why.
This has been doing this for like 6 months. It used to be just fine. And I have DSL. Well,
try a low-quality stream from Bitgravity. See if that works for you.
Okay.
Streaming TV, streaming video. It's so funny how commonplace it's become. It is a very difficult thing to do. And it doesn't always work. So the fact that we're able to do it at all is kind of amazing to me. We stream a lot of video 7 days a week. Try like Bitgravity 400.
Okay. Yeah, see if those all on the bottom here.
Yeah, see if that's working, because what people often think is they think they have more bandwidth than they do.
It does it on I have two computers, an XP and a Windows 7 that it's just
and they both about a year they old. Both have problems with it, or
yeah, I have problems with both of them. And it used to be just fine on the XP, and it's been about the last 6 months. I can't even understand the conversation.
Yeah, well, that's no good.
No,
how's the audio?
That's the same. It's on for 10 seconds and it freezes for 40, and then it's on for 20 and freezes for 50 seconds. You know, it's just
the audio is a lot lower bandwidth. So all of this is measured in how many bits per second you need for it to work. Video, the lowest quality video requires 400,000 bits per second, 400 kilobits per second, which most systems should be able to handle. Uh-huh. Highest quality video goes to a megabit or more. The audio, of course, there's no picture, so it's a lot simpler. That only takes 58,000 bits per second, 58 kilobits. Most people should be able to do audio without pausing. If you're having pausing, then there's other issues going on audio. I could see maybe you'd have trouble with video, but audio should be without any trouble at all.
Yeah, video freezes and the voice freezes.
That I understand, but the audio should work. So if it doesn't work, there's something, probably something wrong. What does your DSL provider say they give you for bandwidth? What are they selling you?
I think up to 1.5 or something like
that. Yeah, it's a pretty slow DSL.
But it's hardly ever that fast even. So.
Yeah.
But it's, like I said...
Well, that's the problem. Right there, you just nailed it.
That was my question. I wondered if there's something going on with my modem or...
Could be. Very well be. I would call your DSL provider, tell them, I can't even stream 56 kilobit audio. What's going on?
Okay.
It may be the modem. They gave you the modem. It may be old. It may be burned out.
Yeah, I've had it for about 5 years.
Yeah, it might be time for a new modem. Ask them if you can buy your own.
Okay.
A lot of times that means you'll get a newer one that's better.
Yeah, I'm thinking about putting Wi-Fi anyway, so I just may as well switch it out. So
you know, the fact that you're getting 1 megabit or less DSL tells me you're fairly far from the phone company's office.
Yeah.
Are you in the mountains up there? Where are you?
Oh, no, I'm in almost into SoCal.
You might just be at a bad location, unfortunately.
Yeah. But it was fine before. That's what's so strange, till about 6 months ago. And started doing it on my XP, and then I got this new laptop, which was Windows 7 right before Windows 8 came out, because I didn't want Windows 8. And so it's less, it's like a year old, and it should be working on this one, I would think.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't tell you specifically what's wrong, and gosh knows I would love you to be able to watch and listen to us.
I know. It makes me crazy. In fact, just when I was on hold, just listening to you without your voice stopping was really nice.
I bet if you try iHeartRadio or one of the other streaming, TuneIn Radio, one of those, you're going to have similar problems. But you might want to. Do you have a smartphone?
No.
Okay. If you go to iHeartRadio.com, try that.
Okay.
See how that is. I mean, I suspect it's not us specifically. I would guess it's all streaming media.
Okay.
In which case,
that was what I was. I just wanted some suggestions.
Yeah. In which case, I'd call the internet service provider and I would say, hey, can I maybe? And one thing you can always try, and this often works in a lot of these situations, is do you have a router as well, or is it just directly plugged into the DSL modem?
It's a router.
Okay. Is reboot. Restart both the router and DSL modem. Literally unplug it, leave them for 10 seconds each, then plug them both back in again. Sometimes that fixes things.
Yeah, the funny thing is I was just up in Washington State, and my brother has DSL up there too, and it was just fine.
Yeah.
I showed him your website because he got a new computer, and we were putting it on his, and there was no interruption at all.
Oh.
Fine. So
yeah,
that's why
it's specific to you.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted some ideas. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm so glad that you love the show and you want to listen that hard.
Okay. Yeah, I do. Every weekend.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
it, Kathy. And the weekdays sometimes, too.
You're not alone. I just got an email from Steve Martin. Said, where'd the podcast go? I want to listen to the podcast.
thank you so much. Is the live.twit.tv, that's the right website.
That's good,
right?
Or twit.tv. Yep, either one.
Or twit.tv. Okay, great. Thanks, Leo.
Kathy, thank you. It's great to talk to you. Take care.
Talk to you too.
Bye. Bye-bye. We are in a modern times, and we expect the same kind of reliability with this internet media, podcasts or live, that we got with television and radio. And we're I don't know how reliable radio was in the 1920s or television was in the 1940s or 50s, but we're kind of at that stage. It's just beginning. So that, we'll get there. I'm amazed we can do what we do. And just think of it that way. You're a pioneer. You'll be able to tell your friends, your kids, your grandkids. You'll be able to say, I remember when we first started watching TV on the internet. It was an amazing thing. Our website, techguylabs.com, awaits you. That's where we put all the questions and answers. Links to audio and video after the fact. Those usually work pretty well, even on a slow system. We put that up on YouTube, I think. And you can also find the kinds of things you're searching for. If you hear me mention a website or an idea or a thought. But you can also put a comment yourself if you've got a better idea. If you say, hey, Kathy, I got a great idea. Just put it up there. TechGuyLabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and smartphones and home theater and digital photography, actually at half past the hour. Well, to be exact, 33 and a third after the hour. Chris Marquardt, our digital photography guru, will stop by and talk a little bit about digital photography, do a little photographic myth-busting. But I want to move on. We're going to take more calls here at 8888-ASK-LEO, starting with Taylor in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Hey, I took your advice with security, and I've been using LastPass, and I'm also using Google Authenticator. And recently,
good.
I switched from an iPhone 5 to a Galaxy 4S.
Yeah.
So I have a whole bunch of tokens with Google Authenticator, Evernote, Dropbox, a whole bunch of stuff on my iPhone 5, with the exception of having to go into each account and reset it up. Is there any other easier way to move that?
So,
those tokens?
Let me talk a little bit about this. Google, I love Google Authenticator, but it is not just Google's. Google made a program that is a version of this, but it uses a technique that's open and widely used called Oath. Not OAuth, but Oath. It's complicated. Don't ask.
Right.
But this standard means that you can. So the idea is, and I know you know this, but I'm going to explain to everybody else, Taylor. The idea is multi-factor authentication. Normally, you authenticate using a login and a password. That's how you get in a website. That's how you talk to your bank. The problem is if somebody guesses or finds out or learns somehow your password, that's it. They're in. So multi-factor authentication makes it a little bit harder by using not just one form of authentication, but two or more. There are three kinds of authentication we can use. Something you know, that would be the password style. Something you have, something physical, or something you are, that would be a fingerprint or your iris scan. Something you have is what this second factor authentication is using Google Authenticator. It means that when I log into a site, I need, for instance, my Google site, I need the Google password. But then, if it's the first time I've used that site on a particular machine, it will say, okay, now I need the authentication code. Now, you know, sometimes authentication codes are generated by dongles on your keychain. I have one from VeriSign that looks, it's about the size of a credit card. You press a button on it, it creates a new code.
I use an RSA token for work.
RSA token, that's right. That's exactly right. That's second factor. That's something you have. And another way you can do it, and I love it, is with your smartphone. Some places will, Twitter, for instance, will send you a text message to a registered smartphone account. So that's another form of second factor. That is something you know, the password, then something you have, your phone. Google Authenticator works that way very nicely by putting an application on your phone that generates every 60 seconds a new six-digit authentication code. Now, the reason this works is Google or whoever you're authenticating with can calculate this based on the time. And so they know they need a secret number, a long secret number that's yours and yours alone, and then they calculate the authentication code based on the current time and your secret number. You have the current time, too. It's based on us roughly having the same time, certainly within a minute of each other. And you know what your secret number is. That's what you used to set up your authenticator, is a secret number. In most cases, if you're using Google Authenticator, you scan a barcode, right? A QR code, a square barcode.
Correct.
Yeah. That square code is just the secret number in QR code. So if you knew that if you'd written down the secret number, but it's long, so you don't want to have to enter it every time. You could also use that. I actually, this is cheating and perhaps makes it somewhat less secure. I save the QR codes. So
essentially you can put it on more than one thing.
I have my Google Authenticator on everything. And what I've done is I use LastPass. We talked about LastPass, which is a secure password store. You want to treat these QR codes as a password. You know, secure them. Don't give them out. But this secure code can be stored in LastPass, and then you use the LastPass code as well. So LastPass, if you go into the settings, you go to two-factor authentication, you can actually show the code. So all you have to do when you're getting a new phone is you launch Authenticator, you say add a new code, or set up account, I think it says, and then you scan the barcode, and it's good. So that'll set up LastPass. Google, same thing. You can go to your Google account and get that barcode. But what I did is I saved them all into LastPass. So now when I have a new phone, I just go into LastPass and I go boom, 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 take pictures of all those QR codes. And now I just set up a new phone yesterday and a Google Authenticator is working on it. So that's the key, is to keep your secret number somehow, whether you keep it as a QR code's easier, then you don't have to do any entry. And does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I was wondering how you did it, because I know you have multiple phones and stuff that you
I have Google Authenticator on every mobile device. because it's so great. Now, by the way, if you use a Windows phone, for instance, Microsoft has an authenticator program. It's exactly the same. It will generate the same 6-digit code because that technique is open and known. What the only thing that's secret about it is that long secret number.
Right. Have you ever used a company called Duo Security?
Yeah.
It's dual factor authentication for desktops.
So yeah, I love Duo. Duo is an interesting play because instead of you getting a secret code, you actually put the Duo app on your mobile device, and then your mobile device will wake up, say, "Hey, you just tried to log in on something. Is it okay?" And you say yes on your phone, and then it says okay. It's communicating with the Duo. That requires a third party. It's a good way to do it. Second factor authentication is fabulous. Your bank should use it. Most do not. Some do, where they'll send you a text message. Bank of America does not do that unless you turn it on. But if you turn it on, then it will send. Then you cannot get into your bank account without a text message. I love that. That's second factor authentication. You should turn it on in Google. You should turn it on Twitter. You mentioned Dropbox, Evernote, anywhere you're storing secure stuff. Outlook.com. And I wish, Yahoo doesn't use it. Facebook does. Facebook does a weird thing. They will either send you a text message or you use the Facebook app to generate the code. Everybody should just use this standard method. Then we could all use Google Authenticator for all our accounts, but they don't.
Does Outlook.com use the Authenticator, or does Outlook.com just send you the text message?
No, it will use an Authenticator. So I got a QR code from Outlook.com, which I saved in LastPass, and now when I set up a phone, I have it using Google Authenticator.
Nice. All right. Thanks, Leo. I appreciate the information.
Hey, great question. Thank you, Taylor. I'm glad we could talk about it because I think this is something people maybe are a little scared of. Remember, there's always a trade-off between convenience and security. If you want ultimate convenience, you don't need a password. Just go to your bank and take some money out. That's not secure. If you have something where you really want to protect it, like your bank account, a password is not secure enough even, in my opinion. You should have two-factor or more. There are places where, highly secure areas where you will enter a password. You'll have a dongle, an RSA-style dongle. You'll enter the dongle, and then it'll say, put your hand here. We want to check a palm print that's measuring your hand, or put your iris up to the iris scanner or a fingerprint. They want three forms. That's really secure. There is a problem, though, with all of this, unfortunately, and it happened recently. There's a guy who has a very desirable Twitter handle, the letter N. Turns out, this guy's a well-known developer. Turns out that the bad guys, and it's really kids, just love to have good, juicy Twitter handles or gamer tags, that kind of thing. They social engineered. So you could have Twitter two-factor authentication and all of that, but because they were able to social engineer it they called his hosting company GoDaddy. They got the last four digits of his social from another site. By making phone calls, often you can get around all of this. And this, again, comes back to security, because these companies don't want to make it, what if you lose your phone? Oh, we don't want to make it impossible. So they always give you secret questions or something like that. That's bad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our phone system. How often do you hear that? By ringcentral.com. I love Ring Central. You know me. I don't like to have anything traditional. I didn't even really want to have a phone system. In the old place, we didn't have a phone system. We made all our employees use their cell phones. But that wasn't going to fly when we built a new facility. We had more employees. We got to have a business phone system. I did not want to go to the phone company. You know how I feel about the phone company. I didn't want to have a PBX in the basement. So we did Ring Central. That was Russell's idea, and he was right. More than 2 years later, we couldn't be happier. Ring Central, they keep adding features. One nice thing about a cloud-based system, of any kind is it's easy for them to add new features. There's no startup cost. There's no PBX in the basement. It's as little as $25 a month per user. And you get, you know, long distance minutes, all sorts of nice features. You actually get a ton of nice features. For instance, you can get your voicemails and your email. You can send and receive fax messages from your smartphone. They have Ring Central app that's so great that lets you make calls on the business line or text messages on the business line from your smartphone. And so when somebody calls the business line, it can ring, you know, your smartphone. The auto receptionist, I love this, greets callers, announces employees and department extensions. They've just added something very cool, meetings. Now with Ring Central, you can host face-to-face meetings, including video. You can share desktops or documents with anyone, anytime, anywhere, on any device with Ring Central. This is really, really cool. And they just kind of bundle it all in. Video conferencing, multi-point HD video meetings around the world. I want you to check out Ring Central. You can do it very easily, 30-day risk-free trial, when you call a special number we've set up just for you, 800-543-9980, 800-543-9980, or you can go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. In fact, it's a good idea to browse around Ring Central because I can't tell you all the great features they have. There's so many of them. They're all listed on the website, though. RingCentral.com. When you buy, use the promo code TWIT for a 30-day free trial. Oh, and by the way, when you buy a desk phone, if you use this trial, you get a second phone free, up to 20 phones total. RingCentral.com. 800-543-9980. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. To Venice we go. David is on the line. Hi, David.
Bonjour, Leo Laporte.
Bonjour, comment ça va?
Bien, thank you. Well, you were talking about Epson, and a few weeks ago, about four, you advised me to buy an Epson PowerLite 2030, which I did purchase.
Oh, good.
In order to watch my DVDs and Blu-ray, but mostly my DVDs, and my image is unfortunately not beautiful at all, because it's such a high-def thing.
So, yeah, the DVDs are 480p.
Yeah.
As opposed to Blu-ray, which are 1080p.
Yes.
That's disappointing, though. That means that the Epson is not doing the upscaling as well as it could, because I watch DVDs on high-def screens. Admittedly, they're not going to be as good as a high-def DVD, but they should be pretty decent.
Oh,
does it look horrible?
Yes, it's pixelated, and when there's white, like, edges of the car, they're all rainbowish.
What are you using for the... That's not good. What are you using for the DVD player?
Well, I stopped the HDMI because that's looking for high quality. So I went to the RCA that's behind my PS3.
Oh, well, that's going to be very bad.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because that's going to be composite,
right,
which isn't even 480p. So, yeah, that's one of the reasons it looks so bad. You got to go back to the HDMI.
Well, there's no difference, I'm telling you. The image is just as ugly. Because I have a PS3. I'm playing it from the PS3, and the only two connectors are either HDMI or the RCA.
Right. Yeah, well, definitely use HDMI.
Yeah.
You know what may be happening? HDMI supports something called HDCP. It's the copy protection that the movie industry insists on. If any device in the chain, the PS3, the cable, or the projector are not HDCP compliant, it's got to go down to 480i, which is terrible.
Yeah.
So I make sure you, the only, now the PS3 is HDCP compliant, and I know the Epson is HDCP compliant. So I'm wondering, where'd you get the cable?
Oh, it came with a PS3.
That should be compliant.
Yeah.
It was going to look bad. Now, your projector should say what quality signal it's getting. What does it say?
I don't know.
Okay, next time, when you first put the signal on, it'll say this is 480i, 480p. You might also go into the settings on the Epson and make sure that it's upscaling. You can also have the PS3 upscaling. If you're doing it from the PS3, I think that it should look all right. So I'm thinking you want to make sure that you're getting the right quality signal into the projector. So do you play games on it?
No, never. And I have a PS3. I hear that all the time.
Yeah, well, you might. Well, you don't have any games, probably, so you can't try it.
Correct.
You know, this should look better than it does. The Epson should look better than it does. So I want to make sure that you've got the settings right in the Epson to expect the right signal from the PS3, and that the PS3 is, how about when you see the PS3 control area? Does that look okay?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, and another thing, I mean, that's for later, maybe, if you want to answer that. When I play movies online, the subtitles are so clear, but the movie sometimes is ugly. I don't understand that. That's weird. But
it is weird.
Yeah.
That's probably because the subtitles are generated by the PS3.
Okay, so that's what I thought. Okay.
I'm not convinced that the settings are right. This should look better. You shouldn't be seeing jaggies at all.
Right. So I did change the PS3 settings to make sure it's aware it's playing a DVD at 480i or P. But how do I change settings from the Power Epson? Because
I would say no. What you want to do is give the Epson the highest quality it can get. So tell the PS3 1080p and the Epson 1080p, even though that's not the signal quality that of the DVD.
Really?
Yeah. Don't, because then they'll upscale it. You want them to upscale it.
Upscaling meaning?
Upscale is what the PS3 can do it and the TV can do it. Both can take a 480p picture and turn it into 1080i.
Okay.
By math, for okay. want of a better word. So this is what has to happen to make a DVD look good on a high-definition display. It needs to be upscaled. And okay. if it's a good upscaler, and it's done, they do this with DSP chips, it should look good. The PS3 has a good upscaler. It should look good.
Very well. And what is, last question, what does HDCP mean? You say HDCP?
High def copy protection.
Could it be that it's only one DVD that I played that's different? Because I tried one particular DVD to make that to check out the image, and could it be that particular DVD or does it?
Well, it could be. Is it a commercial DVD?
It's one of those screeners. So I'm being an actor.
Yeah. Yeah, the screeners, I was watching screeners, same kind of thing. In my case, it was an Xbox One, but it's the same idea on a Blu-ray player on an HDTV, and they looked pretty good.
Yeah.
I wasn't going, oh, this is awful. I knew it wasn't Blu-ray quality, but it looked pretty good.
Yeah.
So I think it's settings. I'm pretty sure it's settings.
Settings and the upscaling. Very
yep.
good.
Make sure you're turning on the upscaling and the settings. I'm pretty sure that it should be all right. By the way, Zendrum says HDCP stands for High Bandwidth Digital Content Protection. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, I hope, please stay in touch. I want to make sure that I didn't steer you wrong. I want that projector to look good for you.
Well, thank you very much. I'll keep you updated.
All right. Thank you, David. Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Rob and Tarzana, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good afternoon, Leo. I have a problem that I heard you address to previous callers, but I've been unable to apply this advice because of the inaccessibility of executives at Asus.
Okay. Yeah, they're a Taiwanese company, so that's not surprising. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. We found that out the hard way. In late 2012, my fiance bought an Asus ZenBook.
Yeah.
And it had a slew of problems, including a defective motherboard that Asus said that it replaced. We've sent that unit back to Asus three times over the first year to replace the same issues.
Yeah.
And after sitting in their repair center for several weeks in November, Asus finally sent us a refurbished model, and that lasted about a day before it was done.
Now, I have to tell you, I've had very good results with Asus computers, and I love the ZenBook. So this isn't a universal problem, but this, you know, it does happen. And I don't think there's any manufacturer that this doesn't happen to.
Let me tell you what's going on now. So we sent the refurb back, you know, for the fourth time now. And now we've called up 2 weeks ago, and they say the device is in wait mode, meaning they're waiting for parts.
Ugh.
And when we called up yesterday, they said they couldn't even locate the refurbished device's serial number in their records, so they couldn't tell us anything. So now, the advice of yours that we've attempted to follow up on was contact the manufacturer's CEO, tell him our problem, and hope that he'll step in and resolve it.
Yeah.
We've called Asus's service department. They can't even tell us the time of day, much less who to contact.
You want to talk to Jerry Shen, S-H-E-N.
Uh-huh.
He is the CEO of Asus.
I've seen his name, but we don't know how to reach him.
Well, you probably could. You want to do it by mail, by the way, by snail mail. Mm-hmm. And I think you probably could address it to Jerry Shen, CEO, Asus Tech, T-E-K, Computer. Beitou District, Taipei, Taiwan. I bet you could get to him. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's time for Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Chris joins us every week to talk about photography, and once a month we do a review of some of your images. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
We asked people to take pictures that illustrate the departure.
Yes.
Here's a guy being towed. That was the departure of his car. fun. Lots of fun pictures at our Flickr group. You can join it, by the way, by going, it's free, flickr.com, and joining the tech guy group. So you're going to pick a few of these departures?
Yes. I made a choice of three pictures. And let me see. The first one is by Flickr member Deerism.
Deerism.
Heroism.
It's a and it's leaf a black and white in the picture. Snow. It's beautiful.
It's a leaf in the snow. It's. I mean, the one thing. Okay, first of all, it's black and white, so it's very, very clear, very graphical. No colors to distract you from anything. Then there's this very clear subject in there. There's this one shape, which is this leaf, and that's pretty much the only thing that's different from the rest. The rest is snow and a fence and some light, and this is the only organic thing in there. And then you have this beautiful silhouette and the shadow that's being cast through the fence off the leaf onto the snow, which kind of gives the picture a lot of depth. And then departure. I'm not sure how to interpret departure into this, but what it does by doing this, by not being like very explicit, is it leaves a lot of room for interpretation. So it is one of those pictures where I go, yeah, let me think about that for a second. In the context of departure, I have to think about what it means and what Deerism meant by doing this. And I like that. It leaves a bit of mystery. So
we'll post all of these images in the show notes. I'm going to send your email off to James Aruvo so he can put those up there. So if you want to see these images as Chris talks about them, our show notes, techguylabs.com, will have them soon. So you know what I like about this? I know it's a leaf, it's a picket fence, it's snow, but it also feels a little bit to me like a church. The maple leaf kind of looks a little bit like a cross.
It is, yeah.
And the light that comes through the picket fence kind of looks like the light that comes through the windows of a church. It has a kind of an interesting feel.
But you know what? It works on you. It might not on someone in a different culture because it kind of plays with your cultural background here.
You're right.
It's a cool picture.
You're right. All right. Thank you, Deerism. Nice picture. Now we go to Biancaluna.
The picture is titled Sinking Sun. And, well, it's just a picture
just
of
a sunset. Just a sunset. Nothing special but here.
What Biancaluna did is he or she used a very wide-angle lens on this picture.
Yeah,
so
I like it.
You get this, well, first of all, huge view, a huge field of view. You have, it's an evening, so there's this beautiful blue and orange color contrast, which is a primary color contrast, so that makes it very strong. And then this wide-angle lens, some wide-angle lenses distort, more like a fisheye, you know. So what you get there is all the lines that do not go straight through the center of the image get bent. And this one is clearly bent, so it's like an inverse curvature of the Earth kind of thing going on at the horizon. And this beautiful cloud streak through the sky. So you have this warmish cloud streak through the blue sky. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
Love it. Love it. So thank you, Biancaluna. And finally, I know this is a crazy idea, folks, to describe pictures on the radio, but we're going to do it. Finally, from Gerald Wiley, toasters don't toast, people toast.
And it's a toaster, a black and white toaster, again, very clear because of that. A black and white toaster spewing out toast.
A pile of toast.
Toast after toast with lots of toast in the air. So there's definitely some Photoshop going on here, some digital manipulation. But
you know, there doesn't have to be. He could have those toasts hanging by nylon threads.
Possible, yeah. Why not?
Could all
then
be
he might
a
have
picture.
Had to edit these out. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
It's anyway, it is kind of, it tells a story. Again, not sure why, but it's toast departing a toaster, I guess. So it tells a bit of a story, and it's a little, it made me smile. That's why I picked it. It made me smile. I liked it.
Three fun photos. Thank you, everybody. So now you know what happens next. A new assignment. What are we going to do?
A new assignment. Now, let's leave the theme of arrival and departure and things and make it a very simple one. The next assignment is 3.
The number 3.
Well, whatever you want to make of it.
I don't think that's ambiguous. I think 3 is 3.
Well, yeah, but let's see what kind of pictures we get. I trust on the creativity of the listeners.
I like it. 3. So here's how it works. You take a picture. It could be, by the way, it doesn't have to be with a big old fancy camera. It could be with your camera phone. We don't care. It's not the camera. It's the photographer. Take a beautiful or interesting or eye-grabbing picture. Mark it with the tag 3, T-H-R-E-E, or I guess you could do the number 3 if you felt like it, and upload it to Flickr. Flickr's a free photo sharing site from Yahoo. If you don't have an account, it's easy to make one. But do go to the Tech Guy group there. You'll know it's the right group because there's, I think, like 10,000 members.
That's huge.
Renee Silverman, our moderator, will welcome you, and then you're allowed to do one picture a week for the next 4 weeks. So you have 4 chances, and then perhaps yours will be picked by Chris next month. 3. That's challenging. Chris has a new ebook. I want to give you a plug for this called 1 Hour, 1,000 Picks. What's the story?
Well, you know, photographers tend to bring a lot of pictures home these days, and then you plug them into your software, Lightroom, for example, and then you start working on them right away, which means that a lot of the time you end up working on the wrong pictures. You need a good way to boil them down to just the couple of handful of pictures that you then really want to work on, and those are the key pictures. And in this ebook, I kind of present a method that lets you plow through 1,000 pictures in 1 hour. That's my claim. I do it regularly. So
yeah, because 1,000 pictures. I need that because I take lots of pictures, but then I just kind of leave them in a pile.
It's an old shiny thing, you know. Oh, look at this. Let me work on that sky right away. Let me work on that right away. And then I have the same problem. I now go back to my old library and I still find pictures that I go, why on earth did I not work on that? Mm-hmm. Why did I not?
But that's not work a bad thing. Maybe there's something in there that you discover.
Well, but then I would have probably discovered the same thing earlier had I worked through the pictures and boiled them down in a kind of a methodical way. And that's what I present in this book in 1 hour, 1,000
That's cool. So you can get an audio or text.
It's both there. You get both together, so you have a choice.
$5.99. I think this is, I'm going to get this because it goes along with your Discover Lightroom.
It's a little companion kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's standalone. I mean, you could read just this. I need this.
Absolutely.
I definitely need this. Thank you, Chris, for helping us all become better photographers. And really, it's a great hobby. It's a fun hobby. Nowadays, the quality you're getting from even your camera phone is so good that everybody should have some fun taking pictures, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Do you ever do video?
Yes, I do. I do both still photography and video. Video is a completely different animal, even though it's visual and you. But all of a sudden, you have this temporal component, and everything changes again because now you have to look at things like rhythm and connecting different shots together into a coherent story, kind of thing. So, yeah, it's it adds to the complexity.
Yeah, I just feel like now because all of our cameras, including our camera phones, can take video as well as stills, that it seems like to me as a photographer, I should be hybrid. I should take, I should be shooting some shots, but maybe it takes 5 seconds of video too, just for fun.
It's fun, and you have a almost a pretty much professional tool at your fingertips with almost every camera nowadays. Yeah.
Chris Marquardt, discoverlightroom.com. Thanks for joining us. Leo Laporte, the e-tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Yes, they will stream the Super Bowl. This is a big one because in the past, you've had to have a Verizon account if you wanted to watch the Super Bowl in the NFL app on your smartphone. But I think now that Fox is going to stream it, and I don't think you have to demonstrate that you have a cable package. I think they're just going to stream it all, which is pretty amazing for free. Pretty amazing. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Ernest is in Norfolk, VA. Hello, Ernest.
Hi, Leo. Pleasure to talk to you. Long time listener.
Thank you, Ernest.
Okay, I've got one for you.
Yeah.
My cell phone is making ghost telephone calls.
That's not good. You're not butt dialing, are you?
No, they're not butt dialing. here's the deal. I still have the unlimited package, unlimited data package. So I was nearing my minutes cap for talking, and I went to look, and I had an extra 115 minutes in the call log on the website. But when I look at my phone, there's nothing there.
Oh, and what are the numbers it's calling?
Oh, they're calling numbers all over the place.
Are the calls lengthy or are they very short?
Some of them are short. There were the longest on the log was 28 minutes.
So I would call your phone company, because what I suspect has happened is somebody has cloned your SIM.
And I called my cell company and I asked that very question, and they said, oh, no, there's no way possible that could happen.
But of course it can. Happens all the time. See, they don't want to absorb the cost. In this case, there was no cost, but potentially there could be. I would tell them, look, who's the company?
Verizon.
Yeah, so there's no SIM, it's a CDMA, but those can be cloned as well. You can clone any phone. And it's clear somebody's using your phone. You're not using it. It's not logging them on the phone itself. So it's clear somebody has cloned your phone. You might try going into a Verizon store. Sometimes getting a person face-to-face is better. And bring your phone and bring your bill and say, see this? What's the story here? You know, then you can demonstrate to them. But they need to, first of all, it is completely possible that your phone can be cloned. And when that happens, you get charged for those minutes. So I think that's pretty clearly what's happening. I can't think of any other excuse. Right, Ernest?
The only other thing I could think is possibly some app is making phone calls, but that should have shown up in my call log.
I would think so. That bugs me. I'm not sure exactly it's not Google Voice or something like that, right? It's just your actual Verizon phone number.
And that's the funny thing. That's exactly why I was having the issue. I share minutes with my wife, so I make all of my calls using Google Voice. So I shouldn't have
any phone calls. Yeah, interesting. Now, Google Voice, okay. Maybe we track this down. Google Voice makes a phone call. Let me think. When you make a phone call with Google Voice, does it not? It's not VoIP. I think this is a common misapprehension. I'm going to have to get the chat room to help me because I don't make phone calls with Google Voice. Does it not make a phone call on your behalf from an actual number?
No.
You sure?
I'm positive.
I got to try it. Yeah. It used to, because it wasn't always in the original. It wasn't VoIP. Google Voice, I think, uses minutes. I think it is Google Voice. Because it uses minutes.
But would Google Voice make phone calls when I'm not making phone calls?
Well, no. But I think that's where your minutes are going. And it'll look like numbers. You know, you could pick one of those numbers and do a Google search on the number. A lot of times, because, for instance, I got a phone call from Florida. I thought, who is calling me from Florida? So I Googled the number just to see, and it was a known Google Voice number. Check those numbers and see if they're known Google Voice numbers. Google Voice does use minutes. And it's like kind of a strange beast. It's not true VoIP. I would guess that's what's going on, and I'm not sure how they get billed to you. Maybe they don't even get billed at the same time. Let me look. Uncle Bick has put a link in the chat room to the Google Voice explanation at support.google.com/voice. Cost. Google Voice on your mobile phone, making domestic calls. When you use Google Voice on your mobile phone, domestic calls will use the standard minutes from your cell phone plan. Each time you place a call, instead of dialing the number you want to reach, Google Voice dials a U.S.-based direct access number, that strange number, like 925-something. The Google Voice server then forwards your call to the actual destination number. So now I'm wondering if it necessarily bills it at the same time as you make your phone. These direct access numbers may show in your phone's call log or on your phone bill. May means may not. Direct access numbers are assigned randomly and may include numbers that are out of your local calling area or even out of state. So I'm guessing, I would look into this and see. It isn't VoIP. Google is actually making a phone call to a Google number and then forwarding your call to the number you want to reach. So it will use your minutes. I suspect that's what's going on. I love Google Voice, but that, I think it's a commonly misunderstood how Google Voice works. It isn't like Skype, which will use the internet to place a phone call, even on your smartphone. So while it could be cloned, I would check into that. I would look at those numbers and see if those are Google Voice numbers. Wow, that's an interesting question. Rich in Scranton, Pennsylvania, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well.
Well, I have two desktop computers at XP on them, so they wouldn't need to have to replace them at a given.
Yeah, you don't have to replace the computers, but understand that XP is not going to be supported after April 8th. You could not use those computers online or put Linux or an updated operating system on there.
Yeah, I'm wondering if should I go out and buy a laptop or buy a tablet or buy a desktop or I'm just...
Well, how do you use it now? Do you need to move around? Do you take it around with you?
No, I don't, but my wife might wanted to take it around.
You ever think maybe you're watching the Super Bowl this afternoon, you'd love to have it something in your lap so that you could look up stuff? I do this all the time. I don't watch TV without a second. So they call this second screening. You ever think you might do that? Because a tablet's great for that. You can answer your email at the gym. You put it on the treadmill, do that too. Answer your email or check through email or play games. I like for if your needs are email and surfing, a tablet's great. What do you do with your computer?
Email and surf.
There you go. Tablet will be less expensive, more secure, less worries, easier to use. I think it's a good way to go. Probably the best thing to do is to go to a store, Apple Store or whatever, and try it. See if you like it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk about, computers and the internet and home theater and smartphones, digital photography, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from the U.S. and Canada. Outside of those areas, let's say you're calling from Wellington, New Zealand, you would use Skype to call us or some similar voice-over internet. There's a lot of them now. And because it's a toll-free number in the U.S., it shouldn't cost you anything. 888-827-5536. You also can find our webpage at techguylabs.com. That's free, no subscription. Everything I do is free, thanks to our wonderful sponsors who pay for everything. We put the show's audio and video up there after the fact. We put all the questions and answers one by one so you can go directly to the question you were interested in, read my answer, and add to it if you wish with a comment. We like that. That means, over time that page becomes more and more valuable. 8888, ask Leo. Brett is in Fort Worth, Texas. Hi, Brett.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome.
Hey, I called a couple of weeks ago, and I was trying to set up a mail server, and you...
I remember, and I discouraged you from that.
Yeah, and you told me that probably my internet service provider was blocking port 25, and that was exactly the situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I've backed off of that, but you had also suggested that there might be a way to use my domain name...
That's right.
My email address.
That's right.
But I didn't get enough details on exactly.
It's a little tricky. What you'll do, so I'll use my example. I have leoville.com. I have a website at leoville.com, my personal website, which I never do anything with. But I also use it for email, and I have for years. My kids' email all go, they have Leoville accounts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't run a mail server. Now, you can. Sometimes web hosts will let you run a mail server, or as you tried, you can run one at home. But I don't want to do that. Gmail, Google runs a fabulous web server, a mail server. I don't need to run anything better than Google Mail. It's great. It's free. They fight spam. I don't have to configure it. I don't have to worry about it. I just love it. So I choose to use Gmail, but I don't want to give out my Gmail address because what if tomorrow I decide to use Yahoo instead? So I want to use leoville.com, which I own, which will always be good, to forward my mail. And you do this by changing your DNS records. Now, do not do this from what I'm telling you now because you want to get the details exactly right or you'll mess it all up.
Okay.
But what you're going to do is change the MX record in your DNS settings. Yeah. So in order to do this, you'll go to your host, not your host, but whoever your domain name registrar is in all likelihood. It might be your host.
It's Hover.
Yeah. So Hover will let you do this. Now, Hover actually has a paid service where they will do your email as well.
Yeah.
But I think why not let Google do it for free, right?
Yeah.
So so you got to figure out where your domain name is hosted. Probably it's Hover. You'll go into your domain name settings, and you'll add an MX record. MX stands for Mail Exchanger.
Yep.
And what the MX record says is when mail comes to leoville.com, in my case, bounce it out to gmail.com. Send it over to Gmail. And after you do that, it's all automatic. And anytime you want to get a new email address, let's say you decide I want to use Yahoo Mail or Outlook instead, you just go and change the MX record. Your correspondents don't need to know about it.
Well, you know, I called Hover about that, and maybe it was just the individual I talked to. He just immediately tried to sell me.
Yeah, because they have their own service. Yeah.
But it is, since they're my domain name provider, the MX record is there. I remember seeing it.
Yeah.
Logged in.
Yeah, I want to be very careful, though, and not just have you go wandering in there and change it because, frankly, you can get in trouble there. So, but they do have very nice domain tools, management tools. You'll use those, and I think you'll be able to easily change the MX record. Probably what you should do is do a Google search for how do I redirect my email using an MX record or something like that.
Okay.
Because you'll need the step-by-step. You've got to type it just right and so forth and so on. It's better to see it than to just listen to what Leo said.
Okay. So
then, by the way, you'll have to go into Gmail and tell it to accept it on your behalf and so forth. So probably there'll be an article somewhere. In fact, let me see if I'll try to find one for you. We'll put it in the show notes. Using Gmail by changing my MX record, something like that, you know. It's totally doable. And actually, I'm even more complicated than that. I actually use another provider in the middle there. You don't want to do what I'm doing. In fact, I can't even remember how I did it. I'd have to go back through it because I did it years ago, step by step. So by doing this, it's completely transparent. No one will know you're doing it. You want to make sure that whatever email provider you're using, the actual email hosting, almost all of them will allow you to change. What you want to be careful about is that the outbound mail looks like it's coming from your domain, not Gmail or Outlook or Yahoo.
Right.
Because you don't want people to start getting that email address.
So does that MX record, is that where that handles?
No, that's in the settings for your email provider.
Uh-huh.
You'll in Gmail, the what do they call it? They used to say on behalf of, and they've taken that part out. Like I said, this is something it would take me a long time to explain, and I'd probably get it wrong. So I want you to, I'll find an article and we'll put it in the show notes for you so you can follow it step by step.
That'll be great.
It's well worth doing, Brett. And then you never have to think about it again. You always give out, you know, Brett@FortWorth, you know, autobody.com or whatever your address is. And you just always use that. For businesses and others, it's great. Now, if you're a business, you might look at paying for Google Apps, which gives you even more stuff. But I just really think it's better not to host it. Let somebody like Google, who has a lot of experience doing this, host it, and you'll be better off.
Yep. All right.
All right. Thanks. Take care. Chip in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Chip.
Hey, special shout out to one of your sponsors, Ting. I saw him at the porn convention in Vegas about.
You did? No, really? Wow.
Nice. They were really nice.
And they had a booth at the Adult Video News convention?
Yeah.
That's an odd place to have a booth. But you know what happens with I've seen this a lot with conferences. Conferences are struggling a little bit. Even the adult conferences are struggling a little bit. So they start bringing in, you start seeing, you know, a conference is struggling when you start seeing kind of booths from other companies, you know, massage therapists. Well, I guess you probably wouldn't do that at an adult conference, but you know what I'm saying? You start seeing stuff like that. So, I'm glad to see it. Now, Ting is the same people as do Hover. We were just talking about Hover. It's the great folks at Two Cows, and I think that they're good people. Do you have a Ting account?
No, but I did ask them, you know, because I do a lot of contesting, and their program isn't geared towards mine because when you make if it's a ring, if it does, someone doesn't pick up, it still counts as a call.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't want that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you can get a special, you can get from somebody, some phone company, a special number that allows you to dial 100 times to get those free tickets.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
are you a pro at this? Are you really able to get a lot of stuff?
Yeah. I do all over, you know, all media.
That's cool.
You know, diversified.
That sounds like a fun, is it a hobby or a job?
It's a hobby. Okay. It's a jobby.
It's a jobby. Hey, Chip, we got to take a break. Hang on, will you? I want to talk more to you. I'll get your question, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. We were talking to Chip in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. He's a contester. It's not a job. It's not a hobby. It's a jobby. And are you doing well at the jobby?
This year has been banner. With the economy and everything, they've been cutting down on the prizes.
Yeah. What's the best thing you ever won?
Best thing, a car.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Now you have to pay taxes and all that, right?
Right.
So do you just end up selling this? You just sell the stuff and keep the cash?
You try to sell it, but when you try to sell it back, the value is going to be going down, you know.
Right.
So it's not the true market value.
Right.
And that's what you want to do. You want to try to find document the true market value for the IRS.
Right. Right. Fascinating stuff. So what can I help you with?
I hate Facebook for contesting because you got to log in. It's like a third party. So I'm doing contesting for my mom. And my girlfriend.
You've made a business out of this. You're like a one-stop shop. So when you say contesting, contesting on Facebook, a lot of times a company says, if you like our page, you're in the drawing for a free pizza or something like that. Is that what you mean?
Right. You have to log on. You have to log into the
account. You have to have a Facebook account. Yeah.
And then that's a lot of work also. But then, you know, I don't know how they do it. I can't find the URL that's hidden somewhere in the Facebook page. And I was hoping some of your listeners who might work on codes would be able to.
You mean you want to do it without logging into your Facebook account? You just want to get that code.
That's right. I just want the URL and get out of there.
Can you give me an example so I could take a look at it? Who's doing a contest on Facebook you'd like to take advantage of?
Xfinity. If you go to Xfinity, you'll see like a little icon on the top. You have to go on the desktop because they're not on the mobile version of it.
Go to Xfinity.com, you mean? I go to their website?
No, you go to Facebook and you
Facebook.
Type in Xfinity.
Okay.
And you'll get to it.
Okay, so here's the Xfinity page. And then you say there's a coupon here somewhere that I want? Or?
Yeah, on the top banner, there's like the second banner on the top, there should be a contest for one of the sci-fi.
I see that. Okay, Helix Escape. Okay. Escape the Arctic Sweepstakes. So when I click that link And now it takes me to this page. And in order to do it, I have to like.
Yeah, you have to like.
Okay. And so that's what they're, by the way, this is why they're giving this stuff away. They want to have, and I think it's kind of skeezy because what you know, a like implies you actually like the Sci-Fi Channel, but really you just wanted to win that chance to win a trip to Miami. So they're collecting likes. And then, of course, if I like them, a couple of things happen. First of all, whenever I go to the sci-fi, you know, it shows up in my profile that I liked sci-fi. And then even, and this is what I really don't like, you know, the second item in the news feed is always an advertisement, a suggested post. And what they'll do oftentimes is say, Leo Laporte likes sci-fi. Or Leo Laporte thinks this is great. And in effect, you give him a free ad. So I understand you want to do the like without actually giving him a real like. You can't.
Right.
There's no magic way to do this without actually giving them a Facebook account.
Does your listener know any way there's like a URL? They must have where in their.
No, I understand what you're thinking, but that URL has to be attached to a Facebook ID or it's meaningless. In other words, there has to be a like. So you put the question out there, and maybe somebody in the chat room will figure this out. But in fact, what happens is there's a token, a long number that's sent out as part of that like. That's your token. That's your account. Absent that, nothing happens. Now, you can make fake Facebook accounts, and unfortunately, a lot of people do that. Basically, what you're trying to do is cheat it, which I don't mind because what they're doing is trying to get me to like them even though I don't like them. Actually, I do like sci-fi, so I give them a like. But the whole idea is to trick people into, you know, they're phony likes. So I'm not crazy about it. But nevertheless, that's how it works. And there's no way, as far as I know, there's no way around it. Dennis in Inwood, West Virginia. Is that right, Dennis? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Hey, listen, first of all, long-time listener. I know you get that all the time.
Thank you.
I go back to the Tech TV days.
It never gets old. It never gets old.
Looking back, you had a couple of shows on Tech TV, but you got a lot of shows now. I wonder what the, if you look at the user numbers between the two.
Oh, it's 10 times higher than that Tech TV ever was.
Please.
The most we ever got at Tech TV was the Screensaver show, which was our highest rated show on an average day. And that's not just one airing, but four airings. The total would be somewhere around 500,000 people. We get well more than 20 million downloads a month. Most shows do more than that.
Well, you've done a good job, Leo.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, but listen,
partly that's because the tech industry and the interest in tech has grown. I can't take all the credit for it.
Right place at the right time, it seems.
Yeah, just be in the right place at the right time. It seems to be important for a lot of things.
You have no idea. Hey, listen, my question is, let me give you a background. I spent, up to last year, I was overseas quite a bit.
Okay.
2 years. And I lived by my iPod.
Yeah, I bet.
Two things, podcasts and audiobooks.
Yep. I hear from people all the time, Americans overseas who listen to our shows for that very reason. It gives them a little touch of home. A lot of our members of the armed forces. Give them a little touch of home.
I was with the armed forces, but I wasn't armed forces.
Okay. You were a contractor?
Yeah, a contractor for a government agency.
Ah, interesting.
Anyway, so...
let's move on.
I've got an Audible library of several hundred books, and I got all your shows. Well, not all your, about five or six of your shows that I listen to. And up until recently, when I'd get a new PC, I'd plug in my iPhone or iPod, and it would say transfer purchases to your iTunes library.
Yeah.
In the last version of iTunes, that option is dropped off the menu on the top left corner.
Oh, how interesting.
And the way you click on erase your device, and then it gives you the option. It's like,
yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right. You can't trigger that transfer.
It used to be on the drop-down top left, there'd be an item that said transfer purchase.
So what you're saying is you have all these books on an iPod, but nowhere else.
Well, yeah, but I change PCs. I want to move them to a new PC. I don't want to download them from Audible over the
internet again.
You can, by the way, do that. That is one option.
I've got a secondary question. I'm done with this and about that.
Hang on a second. We got to take a break, but I won't hang up on you. I'm just going to put you on hold, and we'll continue on. And thank you for your service right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking to Dennis in Inwood, Virginia, West Virginia. Dennis has an iPod full of Audible books, wants to get them onto iTunes. Sometimes iTunes says you want to transfer your purchases from your iPod. Sometimes it doesn't. You would have to be, in order to get those Audible books off of there, you would have to be authorized for that account on that iTunes. Have you logged in and authorized on the iTunes?
Yeah, I haven't actually. I've downloaded some books directly from iTunes.
I don't think you have to say, I want to erase this iPod to transfer this stuff off.
If there was another way with less heart attack...
It is, because you could, of course, abandon that erasure after you transfer the files over, right?
And there's a caveat to this. In the early days, I bought audio books from iTunes.
Right.
If you're on iTunes and you click on purchases, you see your movies, you see your music.
Right.
You do not see the audio books.
Right.
And so the audio books I have from Apple on my iPod, I can't get back. Like, one of my favorite book, which is A Mote in God's Eye. I don't want to run the risk of erasing. So if there's a way of another menu I don't know about or some
so
other way.
So understand that a lot of this is just kind of copy protection nonsense.
Yeah.
Now, these Audible books are already copy protected. Dr. Mom says that when you connect up your iPod and you click in books, she can drag the books out of the iPod. That doesn't sound right. You sure, Dr. Mom? She says you can drag to import the Audible books into... I understand. She's going in the other direction. You have them only on your iPod. You want to get them on the desktop, on the computer.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you don't. And he knows, folks, that you can re-download them from Audible.com. He's just trying to. He's already downloaded them. He's just trying to copy them over. Are you on Windows or Mac?
I'm currently on Windows. My MacBook got destroyed.
Did it get shot?
Almost as bad.
Did it get blown up?
Dropped out of a helicopter.
Man. Do you work for Blackwater by any chance?
No, I don't like those guys.
Okay. Anyway, you're the other team. You're the Broncos, not the Seahawks. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm back home now.
So there are programs you can use to copy in Windows to copy files from an iPod. The reason they don't do that kind of just let you automatically do that is because it's poor man's copy protection, because it's very easy to get around it. So there was a program called Sanuti for a while. There was there's one called FPod, EPHPOD. That's free. You might try that one, EPHPOD.com. It would get the files off of the iPod. Just copying them. You don't have to go through iTunes.
Yeah, I'm using Windows 8 machine now. I didn't know.
Yeah, I think that'll work.
Yeah, it's like I said, until the last versions, or maybe the last two versions, it's been real easy to do.
Yeah.
And my only Mac I got now is a G5 Power.
Wow, you need a new Mac, my friend.
You know, I got a couple dual screens, big cinema displays on it, and it still works great, except it won't run the newest.
Yeah, that's the problem. Everything now requires an Intel chip.
Yep.
Yeah. I think just use those. There are a number of free programs that will do this. EPHPod is a good one that will just copy those files over. And I believe at that point they will just show up in the books. You know, they're special. I think they're AAX or something. They have a special file extension that lets the iTunes program know that there are books and to be treated differently.
I'll give it a try because, like I said, even though I know what's probably going to say transfer purchase after I click erase, I still get a...
Is there no longer in iTunes a transfer purchase?
You have to click on erase this device. I mean, it used to be a drop down, but no longer. So.
I see. Well, now, wait a minute. Now, go to... Okay, I have the latest iTunes. I think there is. I think it's just they put it somewhere else. If you go to the file menu in iTunes, devices, you got to have the device hooked up. You'll see transfer purchases from the device.
I don't know. Maybe it's me. It doesn't show up on my iTunes. And the device, you can see the device on there, its own little icon, top right corner of the screen, iPod, whatever it is. But it never... It used to be in the file, and it'd be a transfer purchase.
Oh, I know why. Because that iPod is not linked to that iTunes.
Ah.
Yeah. So it has. This is another kind of poor man's copy protection because it doesn't really do anything. But that's in order to take that iPod and use it with a new computer, or in this case, the really really old computer that you have, but it's never seen before. You have to erase the iPod, and that's what you don't want to do.
No.
Yeah. So I'm thinking you should use one of these third party programs and forget iTunes.
I'll see what I can do. Oh, two more quick things. Sure. Earlier, you mentioned Surface, Microsoft Surface.
Yeah.
I have to give a plus vote for the Surface.
You have a Surface?
I have an RT and the original Pro.
Okay.
I want to love them because I like Microsoft, and sometimes devices are hard loving when you want to try. But the RT, it's quick to boot, good battery life. It doesn't have, you can't run legacy programs. But like you said to the earlier caller, if you want to surf the web and get your email,
it's enough. Yeah, and by the way, if you want to buy the old RT, the one Microsoft took a $900 million write-off on, you can get them pretty cheap because nobody wants them. I don't think it's a bad device. You know, we do a Windows show called Windows Weekly, and Mary Jo Foley, one of our correspondents, loves her original Surface RT, the very first. She's very happy with it. I like my preference in RT, which is the ARM-based version of Windows 8, is the Nokia 2520. I really like that a lot. I personally find the Surface, and this is purely aesthetic, the Surface design a little clunky. That's all. It's a little thick and clunky.
A little thick, but I like the industrial design. It's just my taste.
Yeah, that's a matter of taste, and it is certainly not objective in any sense. I like the little click stand. That's kind of nice. And the newer ones have two positions, which I think they needed because the one position that wasn't always the right position. It's a nice touch screen. They're fairly affordable. I cracked my RT. I dropped it and cracked it. Didn't drop it out of a helicopter, just... But same end result.
Trying to put that back together. It was like super glued.
Oh, man. You needed a tough book.
It was tough, you know.
Dennis, it's great to talk to you. So there you go. Vote for the Surface. And I do think the Surfaces are very good devices. I'm not a big fan of Windows 8.1 is partly the reason I'm not.
I can't see much of a difference between 8 and 8.1, so maybe I'm just not.
Or 8. I'm not an 8 guy.
Yeah, I
like 7.
One came out and they said it's so much different. I said, well, I can't see much different.
Hey, Dennis, thank you. I appreciate the call. It's great to talk to you. Take care. Stay. Next time you're in a helicopter, try to keep everything inside. But, you know, just simple advice. But I'm just teasing. I'm sure you knew that. 8888 Ask Leo. JR is in Detroit City. Hello, JR. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey there, Leo.
Hey, JR. What can I do for you today?
Oh, not much.
Well, then,
really enjoy
nice
listening to your show every weekend. I listen to your podcast. Look, I need some advice, and I respect your opinion.
Okay.
I'm on a limited budget. I work with Windows 7 when I have to, but I'm primarily a Linux guy for about 20 years now.
Good man.
And probably that's been on and off, but within the past year, I'm just going completely to Linux, and I use Windows 7 as, backup. But anyway, I'm building a new computer, and I'm on a fixed budget. I'm elderly, don't have a whole heck of a lot of money.
Hang on, we got to take a break, and I will help you, I promise, right after this. Leo Laporte, okay. The tech guy.
Great.
That sounds like a kind of a sign of a big game, kind of a song. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Jackson's visiting us from Wellington, New Zealand. Do they play American football in Wellington? Anything? Have any idea what the Super Bowl means to us here in the States? Yeah. Yeah. In Australia, you got the Melbourne Cup. Melbourne Cup. This is like that. In Canada, you got the Grey Cup. This is like that. In soccer, you have the World Cup. See, their mistake is they called it the Super Bowl. They should call it the Super Cup. Everybody would know. what it means. Or maybe, except in America, where we'd be very confused. We were talking to JR in Detroit before the break. He wants to build a computer. You said you're on a fixed income. How low do you want it to go?
Well, it's going to have to be low because obviously I'm looking at the AMD FX 6300 or the 6300.
Let me point you to a site that I love. Friend of mine, Ryan Schrout, runs. It's called PC Perspective. You go to PCPER.com, and right there in the menu bar of it, they have the HW leaderboard. You know, see, the problem is you see this, you don't know what it is. But look in the menu bar for HW leaderboard. What it is the, they call it their hardware leaderboard, and they have sample PCs from the Dream system at $3,300 to the low-end system for $474. This describes the components that you would put into a budget system, including, yes, the AMD processor, the Kaveri. They test all of these, though, so you know you're getting something right. Good. A gigabyte motherboard, Radeon video card. They're 4 gigs of RAM. There's terabyte drive. Yeah.
Let me inject something in here real quick.
Sure.
I'm dyed-in-the-wool NVIDIA person.
Okay. Well, you could browse through the site for a comparable video card that is not an AMD. I mean, that's fine.
This is the main question that I really am calling for, because I respect your opinion. And I've done a lot of research. I've been building computers for about 20 years. So I've
You know what you're talking about here.
Maybe. All depends on who you're talking to or who you ask. Yeah, but I really got serious with Linux about a year and a half ago, and I'm trying to build my own Machinima audio-video workstation, and I've centered on I'm switching in between Sabian Linux, and I've been monkeying around with Mint Linux and Debian. I've used Debian forever.
Yeah.
But I recently switched over to Sabian, which is different. And it's got to be built for Machinima and audio video effects.
Are you making Machinima videos?
Yes.
What are you using, Halo? What are you using for your Machinimas?
Well, actually, I'm trying to build this whole thing together. I'm combining the Mate user desktop interface and the Cinnamon user desktop interface.
Oh, you're a sophisticated coot. I love it. You know what you're doing here.
Yeah, I've got all.
So, what is your question? What is your question?
Well, here's the main question. Is I understand, I like the AMD 6300 FX 6300, which consumes 95 watts of power.
The issue is going to be Linux drivers.
Yeah, okay. Now, here's another thing. And the 6350, which is 125 watts, yeah, which it consumes. All right. So there's a power difference. I don't see much difference in the specs, but what I've been reading in my research has told me that if the chipset on the motherboard is an AT or an AMD chip or ATI chipset, then it's probably not going to work real well.
This is well beyond my area of expertise. You're going to have to go to PC Perspective or somewhere like that on this, JR, because it's been a long time since I built a system, and this is one of the reasons. System integration can sometimes be troublesome. The good news for you is, thanks to Steam, which makes this Linux-based game machine called the Steambox, both AMD and NVIDIA have really upped their game as far as Linux support. That's really good news, because they want to make sure that people who make Steamboxes and a lot of different companies will use their hardware. So it just got a lot easier. That's the good news. But I can't really help you too much with the details, JR. It's way beyond my pay grade. But I appreciate the call, and I love what you're doing. That is awesome. Bill in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Bill.
Hello, sir. How are you, Leo?
I am very well.
Good.
I'm sorry to hear that you're being maligned on the internet.
Yeah, I'm not happy about it at all. But just by the way, I wanted to tell you that lady that answers the phone is so kind.
Heather Hammond, the great phone ranger. I agree.
What a neat woman.
Oh.
Boy, she was so nice to me.
Thank you. Thank you, Heather. Two thumbs up.
Yeah.
You know, she worked for Dean Adele for 11 years.
Really?
He taught her how to be nice. I'm trying to teach her how to be mean, but it's not working.
I don't think you're going to be able
to. It's not working.
It's not going to work.
So I only got a minute or two left, so let me get your question.
I want to make it brief. I don't want to take your time. Somebody has posted some stuff on the internet about me that is not true, and I don't know.
Here's all you can do. If it's not true, you can sue them for libel.
How do I find them?
You will have to go through a court process. This is the same problem the record industry has when they see people pirating music. You have to figure out who their web host is. Somebody's hosting that site, I presume. Where are they maligning you, on Facebook or on a website?
You know, I have to tell you, I haven't seen it yet. I have a friend who...
You've heard about it.
No, I asked him to pull it up because I've had just... All of a sudden, a lot of people just turned their back on me.
Oh, that's horrible. You know, unfortunately, a lot of this is protected by free speech. Your only defense, you cannot go to Google very effectively and say, hey, Google, take it down. You have to find out who's hosting it. You'll probably have to go after them in civil court, suing them for libel. If it's not true, then you can sue them for libel. It is not easy. It is difficult. You'll have to get a subpoena to go to the internet service provider or the hosting company, and on and on and on. The only thing you can do is go to a lawyer right now who knows something about this.
And I have no idea about it. I'm working against the technology that I don't understand.
Well, and the truth is there isn't much you can do about it. That's the real truth of it. And it's horrible. I've had it happen to me. I've been maligned like crazy. Fortunately, I have a fairly large presence on the internet, so... When you look for me on the internet, you find everything, the bad and the good and the lies, but you find everything. And that means that people will find good stuff. If you don't participate in the internet much, then all they will find when they search for your name is the bad stuff, the stuff somebody else is putting up.
Sure.
That is a real problem. And it's tough. I don't know what the answer is.
I understand these things called reputation management companies.
Well, you know the way that works? They post more stuff under your name. So that there's more stuff to find, but it's not stuff you did. It's random stuff. I don't think it's not an effective tool.
Oh.
And to really get the good, effective stuff, $10,000 a month.
Oh, it is? Really?
Yeah.
There was something I used to hear advertised. I don't hear it anymore, called Reputation Defender.
Yeah. No. They have an inexpensive plan, which does nothing. And they have a very expensive plan, which celebrities and others use, which effectively is posting stuff on your behalf so that when somebody does a Google search for your name, they find the other stuff first.
Is there something I can do myself?
No. You can sue them for libel. That's the only thing you can do, and that's not very effective because, as you say, it's hard to find them. This is a big problem. The internet is full of trolls, and there's not much you can do about it. I'm sorry. It's terrible. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.